Argue, argue, talk, talk, talk. Exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk. Why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Good afternoon. It's afternoon everywhere in the lower 48. You're tuned to BBS Radio Station 1. Welcome to Spouting Off. I'm your host, Karen Cataline. It's Wednesday, October 24th, 2017. And oh my, is there a lot going on? I have a 4-hour show, so I'm not going to try to ladle everything into 1 hour. We'll get to as much as we can. It is, oh boy, there's a lot going out there. But first, I have to say, this is my favorite time of year. I love this time of year. Our dog is rolling around on the leaves and walking into the house like a Velcro dog, looking like a tree. And there's leaves all over the house, and I don't care because I love the leaves as they turn. I live in the part of the country where we have four seasons. You may not, but I love all four seasons. I would say I like fall and spring better than winter and summer, but still. Anyway, it's also this time of year that I love because it's my birthday week coming up next week. So I'm going to be taking next week off, and I have for you a guest host that you're going to love. I hope, and I know you will. Her name is Dr. Martina Cartwright, and she's not only a friend, but also someone who I have partnered with on my book, which is called Fatlash Food Police and the Fear of Thin. We're working on a second edition of that book, and I'm working on a second book, a companion book to Fatlash, which we may not get to today, but eventually we will. Anyway, Martina Cartwright is a scientist, a dietitian, an immensely talented woman and a friend, and she's going to take the show next week. So I hope you will listen in and give her a call. We have what I like to call the little bites of big issues. There's so many issues, and you get to decide what's big and what's little. But there's a lot going on. As a matter of fact, there's breaking news. As I'm broadcasting to you, there is breaking news right now on Wednesday, October 24th. What is it? Jeff Flake has decided not to run for re-election. Now, if you're a political watcher out there, are you shocked by this? Jeff Flake, who has been taking on President Trump since the moment he decided to run for office, Jeff Flake, who stole the book name by Barry Goldwater, his fellow Statian Arizonan, stole the name of the book called The Conscience of a Conservative. And Jeff Flake is, by many people's standards, no conservative. Why is the reason he decided not to run for re-election? Many people don't think he could win. So while he's out there screaming about how he is the standard of principle, he's not running because he probably couldn't win, which leads me to another little bite of big issues. And that is, fellow politicians have had a lot to say this week, a whole lot to say about the current president sitting in the White House, Donald J. Trump. And it seems, for some reason, that the older one gets, and I don't mean this with any malice, and closer to death, the more some politicians get honest about what they really think. John McCain, who everyone knows is terminally ill with a deadly brain tumor, and we wish him no animosity, but boy, oh boy, has he been speaking out. In recent months, I mentioned how he mentioned that the National Constitution Center's Liberty Medal, when he was getting it, he lambasted President Trump for half baked, spurious nationalism. Well, guess who also has been speaking out against nationalism? It's been President George W. Bush, who could not speak out one word against the guy who took his seat, Barack Obama, who you would think he would. People thought George W. Bush was a conservative. Obviously, he didn't read the original Goldwater book, The Conscience of a Conservative, because none of the Bushes have ever been conservative. They squandered the Reagan Revolution by taking us in a totally different direction. That's a subject also for another day. But George W. Bush decided to speak out this week and, quote, made veiled insults to President Donald Trump, who it's no secret he hates, said conspiracy theories, and I quote, conspiracy theories and outright fabrication in which nationalism has been distorted into nativism. So here you have two establishment Republicans who are bashing nationalism as some mysterious evil form of Nazism. That's what the left has been doing too. They want to give nationalism a bad name. Why? Because they're globalists. They don't believe that America deserves to have borders and an actual language. They believe in globalism. Are they having their pockets lined by globalism? Well, I'm not going to conject on that, but you can make your own ideas about that. So here we have Bush and McCain, Republicans, bashing the president who's currently in office of their own party because he's such a threat. And guess who came out this week and decided to defend President Trump? Kind of makes you wonder. Politics does indeed make strange bedfellows. We have Jimmy Carter, who admitted publicly, because he's not a spring chicken anymore, he was a terrible president, terrible for Israel, quite pro-Palestinian. He's made those sentiments clear in recent years. And yet, he said this, I think the media has been harder on Trump than any other president, certainly that I've known about. I think they feel free to claim that Trump is mentally deranged and everything else without hesitation. Can you imagine if the media called Obama deranged when he used the word corpse instead of core, or said some other word that he misspoke in some way? But then Jimmy Carter said this, and on Russia's attempt to influence the 2016 election, Carter didn't seem to be buying it. He said, quote, I don't think there's any evidence that what the Russians did changed enough votes or any votes, he told Dowd. There you go. So here's Jimmy Carter, who's old enough not to care, who has told the truth about what's really going on. And you know what? The Democrats weren't happy with him. That's for sure. Okay. So here's another little bite of big issues. We're coming up to almost the first anniversary, November 8th, of Trump winning the 2016 election. And he has, as Jimmy Carter said, put up with more vitriol than anybody in memory in our history. A media that is willing, and I won't go on as long as I'd like, willing to accuse the president with no evidence, I might add, of colluding with Russia, while knowing full well that the Democrats actually were. Huge, huge story. The Uranium One deal, I'll try to get to it, and it figures into one of our main key issues of the show. First, I want to talk about Donald Trump. So in 9 months, Donald Trump has single-handedly been dismantling Obamacare because the Congress wouldn't do it. He has, this is a story that just came out today, or in this past couple of days, nearly 1.5 million Americans dropped off the food stamp rolls. Can you imagine? 9 months, the Democrats love government dependence. And yet, Donald Trump is getting citizens off food stamps. Why? He's putting them to work, just as he said he would. He is increasing the number of jobs available, and he's doing lots and lots behind the scenes. He doesn't really care that people bash him while he goes about doing all the things he said he was going to. I've got to cheer for him because he's actually keeping his promises. While the Republican establishment and the vitriolic left try to smash him to pieces, they simply haven't been able to do it. So here he's getting people off the welfare rolls. Here's another huge Trump story that I bet you haven't read in the mainstream media. Quote, "It's been 3 years since President Obama called the Islamic State a terrorist organization that emerged in the Iraq power vacuum left behind after his premature troop pullout in 2011. This is Katie Pavlish, by the way, so I give proper attribution. Obama called it the JV team. That's what he called ISIS. Actually, he called it ISIL. He's the only person to continue to insist on calling it ISIL, and I find that suspect. Oh, Obama. He'd been rooting for the wrong side, not ours. So, in just 9 months, the situation has drastically changed. President Trump officially announced the fall of Raqqa. Where's Raqqa? That's the Syrian city where ISIS held their headquarters. Raqqa is where we could have taken over ISIS and gone and fought them, but we refused. It is the end of the ISIS caliphate in sight. Now, that doesn't mean it's the end of terrorism. It doesn't mean it's the end of Muslim Islamic radicalism. It simply means that they are successfully, that this is what Donald Trump said. Do you think the mainstream media reported it? This is huge, because under Obama, ISIS grew by leaps and bounds, committed terrorist attacks all over the world. And here's what Trump said. "I'm pleased to announce that the Syrian Democratic Forces, our partners in the fight against ISIS in Syria, have successfully recaptured Raqqa." How do you like that? Do you remember in the campaign when Trump irritated and annoyed people by saying, "We're going to knock the hell out of ISIS"? Looks like he's doing just that. He's knocking the hell out of ISIS. So it's amazing what having priorities straight can actually do. When you have the safety and the security of the American people and your priorities straight, suddenly you are having success. The stock market, as of the last time I checked, today is having yet another boom. It's now 23,476. It was 200 points up today, just today. Now, meanwhile, Trump is having fights with Corker and with Jeff Flake, public arguments with Corker and Flake, and they're both condemning President Trump and saying this, "The flagrant disregard of truth and decency." That's what Jeff Flake said when he decided he wasn't going to run for re-election anymore. And his point is that it's Trump that is the liar and the flagrant disregard for truth and decency. Isn't it an upside down world that in which we're living in? So Trump is winning on all kinds of fronts. People keep asking, why Why do they hate him so much? Why do they hate Trump so much? And why? Because they project on him the false charges of the crimes that they are guilty of. No one is so dangerous as the man who's willing to tell the truth and not care. Now we're seeing why he was such a threat. Precisely because these things are coming out. The Uranium One deal, hopefully we'll get to that. The pushing of globalism down our throats, the lies, the deceits, the criminality, the obstruction of justice would only come out if Donald Trump were elected and if he remained in office, because they knew they couldn't buy him. He represents the pushback of the people, and all of them, Republicans and Democrats, would be exposed. And guess what? He's exposing them. Just as at the beginning of, I think we're at the beginning of the prosperity that he promised, which has been suppressed for a decade. So I'm in a good mood because I know that Trump is not going to take it lying down. Hopefully he'll have some true principled support from the Republicans in his own party who understand that he is doing what the voters asked him to do. Does he represent what everybody wants him to do? No. But he won the election, and he is our voice in the White House, and he said that's what he'd do. Okay, let me give you a little tease, because we've got plenty of time. I'm going to give you a little tease of what we're going to be talking about, and I'm going to get right to it, but it brings in so many things that are in the news right now. And that is, I did a lot of study this week about Faust. You're thinking, what? What's she talking about Faust for? Faust has been the legend of Faust, or the Faustian bargain, has been a legend that has been with us in a variety of forms and areas for decades. And the story, I'm not a super, super well-read person in the classics, but it's the story of a person who would make a deal with the devil. Faust made a bargain with the devil. And it occurred to me that that's what is a lot of the stories going on today. All right. So case in point, I'm going to ask you, and then I'm going to use some examples. Okay. And then after our only break in the show at the bottom of the hour, we have a little commercial break so I can take a drink and hopefully take your calls. I'm going to ask you, have you been offered a deal with the devil? And you said, no, that's a price I refuse to pay. What's your personal moral compass? What's it based on? Because we have people in the news right now who don't seem to have a moral bottom. That's why I did the lead up that I did about Donald Trump. He's being demonized for exactly the things that the demonizers are doing. What's going on here? Right. So let me first give you the numbers. Okay. So if you want to call and get in on this conversation right after the commercial break, the number is 888-627-6008. You can call in and listen in, and then I'll take your call and we can talk in real time. If you'd like to call direct, it's 323-744-4831. So what do I mean about the Faustian bargain? Well, what got me thinking about this was this week, we had one of the most moving speeches by the Chief of Staff, General John Kelly. What a principled man. This was just last week, and it was after I did Spouting Off last week, in which John Kelly came to the defense of Donald Trump. I wasn't even going to talk about this story because to me it seemed like a distraction. The story I'm talking about was when Congressman Wilson, Frederico Wilson, it was just the huge shiny thing that everybody was talking about last week, listened in on a conversation between Donald Trump, who didn't have to call a widow, and he made a condolence call to a widow. And in fact, John Kelly told him not to do it. He counseled him on how to do it. I strongly urge you to listen to the entire tape of what he said. But then there was yet the second brouhaha when General Kelly admonished Frederica Wilson and called her an empty barrel, making the loudest noise. Now, what does that mean? I'd never heard of it. Frederica Wilson certainly had never heard the term empty barrel. But what did she do when she was courted by all the mainstream media, the leftist media, who wanted to make her a martyr, wanted to make her the latest victim? She said, and I quote, "That's a racist term. We looked it up in the dictionary because I had never heard it. Heard of an empty barrel, and I don't like to be dragged into something like this." So before she even knew what it meant, she called it a racist term. Well, I looked it up too, because I had never heard it either. An empty barrel was referenced by Shakespeare when the bard used a similar term upon writing that an empty vessel makes the loudest sound. However, the old term could have originated with Plato. I guess he was a racist too, when noting that loud, empty vessels have the least wit, but are the greatest babblers. However, others point to the Romans as the originators of the term related to an empty barrel when they noted that empty pots make the most noise. So we have that bit of sound for you. We're going to listen to General Kelly himself. And we're going to listen to cut one right now. Go.
It stuns me that a member of Congress would have listened in on that conversation. Absolutely stuns me. And I thought, at least that was sacred. You know, when I was a kid growing up, a lot of things were sacred in our country. Women were sacred and looked upon with great honor. That's obviously not the case anymore, as we see from recent cases. Life, the dignity of life, was sacred. That's gone. Religion, that seems to be gone as well. Gold Star families, I think that left in the convention over the summer. But I just thought the selfless devotion that brings a man or woman to die on the battlefield, I just thought that that might be sacred. And when I listened to this woman and what she was saying and what she was doing on TV, the only thing I could do to collect my thoughts was to go and walk among the finest men and women on this earth. And you can always find them, because they're in Arlington National Cemetery. Went over there for an hour and a half, walked among the stones, some of whom I put there, because they were doing what I told them to do when they were killed.
How do you like that? That was one of the most moving speeches ever, not only because he was standing up for the president, who basically has the most wonderful ability to allow people to step in it before he fights back. Notice, yeah, I'm a great looker. I don't know what you want to call it, but I love looking at patterns of people's behavior. Maybe it's because I'm trained as a social worker, and I really like to see the patterns of behavior. Most of the people in the political establishment in the Washington Beltway have absolutely no clue what Trump is doing because they've been so isolated from real people. Now, I know, to call a billionaire a real person, but he's been called the blue-collar billionaire because he's made his way in the real world, like all of us. He's been wildly successful. Do I think he's perfect? No. But I will stand up for Donald Trump because so many others are not. And he's standing up for us. Anyway, I love that he fights back. I love that he's a counterpuncher. And I love that Donald Trump waits and bides his time before he fights back. If you'll notice, he's waited for almost 9 months for the Democrats to smear and demean him about a phony story about Russia that they have not been able to prove, that there is no evidence based on phony information, and they're smearing themselves. And what happens? All of a sudden, you find out that it is indeed the very accusers who are guilty of collusion with Russia in the Uranium One deal. But I digress. Let's go back to the point at hand. You see, there's so much going on. Let's go back to the point at hand. I thought the reason I played that sound for you is because it made me think that John Kelly was asking just one of the most crucial and core questions you could ask. Is nothing sacred? Nothing today? Is nothing sacred? If a congressman can listen in on a call, a bereavement call that a president makes, and by the way, it was a planned call, that congresswoman had to know. She was sitting in the car listening. So she can use it for her own political advantage. If that can happen, then nothing is sacred. And that led me to the next question that I'm asking you. If nothing is sacred today, what's sacred to you? As far as what's your moral compass? What is the bottom over which you will not go? Well, Faust made a deal with the devil. And that's why they call it a Faustian bargain. And the story of Faust and the Faustian bargain comes up in a variety of different ways throughout art and literature all over the place. The one that I thought of, since my two careers really are as a social worker and as a professional performer, was the musical Damn Yankees. It was a Broadway musical in the 50s in which a middle-aged real estate agent named Joe Boyd is a long-suffering fan of the Washington Senators baseball team. And his wife, Meg, is constantly lamenting that she's a widow 6 months out of every year because he's a sports fanatic. But he just is always wishing and hoping and praying that if we just had one long ball hitter, just one long ball hitter, they could beat those Damn Yankees. Perfect time because they're starting the World Series tonight. And the Yankees, those damn Yankees, aren't playing in the World Series this season. But all of a sudden, Mr. Applegate appears. Mr. Applegate is the devil. And he offers Joe Boyd an opportunity to become the young slugger who's going to help the Senators beat those damn Yankees. Now, I'll just tell you that in the musical, which is one of the great all-time musicals ever, there are many, Ray Walston played the devil. And if you've not seen Damn Yankees, it's been done and done and done many, many times. But Joe Hardy takes him up on his deal, but he gets an escape clause. So if he wants to, he can still go back to his wife. Anyway, Damn Yankees is only but one of the great examples of making a deal with the devil. So we're going to talk about making a deal with the devil, because apparently I'm going to say that another story in the news, and it's still in the news, I think it's going to be in the news for a long time, is the story of Harvey Weinstein. Now, many, many people have waxed philosophic about Harvey Weinstein, but I'm asking this question. What about the women? I lived in Los Angeles and in Hollywood for a while until I couldn't stand it anymore. I was never one of those ladies because I was a chubby character actress. And that has a lot to do with my book, which hopefully I'll get to talk about one of these days in the upcoming shows ahead. But I watched a lot of women who were willing to sell their very soul for a part, for fame, for recognition. And that's the part of the story that is not being told, because all these women are being hailed as some kind of courageous hero. Now, should any of that have happened to them? Heck no. Weinstein is no victim. And this idea that he's in therapy is just another liberal idea that we've got to, you know, I guess pretty soon we'll have rape and robbery and murder rehab too. And he has been accused of rape. He needs to be prosecuted. That's simply against the law. And what has been protecting him? Well, fame and power and wealth has protected him. So here's my question for the second half of our show, and we're going to take a break, and then we'll take your calls in the second half of our show, Spouting Off. And that is, what is your moral compass? Have you ever been confronted with a deal with the devil? Have you ever been asked to pay a price that you said you weren't willing to pay? What are your moral boundaries? If you're willing to share, it's an anonymous phone call. You can talk to us. And what about when you finally put your foot down? Because some of the people in the public, like Hillary Clinton, doesn't seem to have a personal bottom and a limit. And so that's our question. Have you ever been presented with a Faustian bargain? And you can give us a call, toll free, 888-627-6008, or you can call us direct at 323-744-4831. And here is our break coming up, and we're going to be right back with Spouting Off. This is Karen Cataline.
Hi, I'm Joy, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arnn, on why the Constitution limits government.
James Madison writes in Federalist 51 that men are not angels. Their passions and self-interest often get the better of their reason and sense of justice. So we need government in order to protect our rights against those who would take them away. But for the same reason, Madison writes, government must be limited, because people in government have passions and interests too. Many Americans today forget this. Supposing that we can do away with constitutional limits on government, supposing that the unelected bureaucrats being put in charge of our health care, for example, will rule as if they are angels. If Madison was correct about human nature, this is foolish and dangerous.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askauntemma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askauntemma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
And we're back. And you're listening to BBS Radio Station 1, and this is Spouting Off. You're always better off when you're spouting off. That's our little slogan. And that's because you always got to get stuff off your chest. That's why I love doing this. It feels like it's what I was born to do. I just love having a forum to do that. And you can take advantage of the forum too. I'm going to give you the numbers one more time. Now the phone lines are open and feel free to call in. And if you have any comments on any of the things that I've mentioned thus far, and if you disagree, that's even better. I'm very fine with disagreement. In fact, that's what makes great talk radio. When you can argue, talk, right? That's our opening. So you can call me toll free at 888-627-6008, or you can call direct at 323-744-4831. So I was talking about, is nothing sacred? And what is your moral compass? What have you in your business or in your personal life been asked to compromise your most sacred held beliefs and values? And what was your boundary? Did you say no? And what are they? What do you think ought to be sacred today? You can't depend on the culture for that. In fact, the culture is cultural rot out there. You have to make those decisions pretty much for yourself. Because if you are a person who wants to live by certain values, thank God you still can in this country. But if you're taking your cue from the mainstream media, oh my goodness, from Hollywood, it's a scary thing out there. So the reason that the Harvey Weinstein story is so huge, and I kind of alluded to this before the break, is that a lot of people, and especially in Hollywood themselves, are extolling the virtues of a lot of women who came forward after 20, 30 years about Harvey Weinstein. Well, I found the most wonderful article about Hollywood. And this is not a well-kept secret. The casting couch in Hollywood has been with us for decades and decades. Here's an example. Daryl F. Zanuck was legendary in the industry, not just for the movies he made. Daryl Zanuck worked his way through actresses on the sofa in his office faster than the credits rolled on his flicks, according to the book, The Zanucks of Hollywood. The Dark Legacy of an American Dynasty. That's by Marilise Harris. So he was known to be one of those folks who flaunted and abused his power over young starlets. The question is, were those starlets willing to sell themselves and their bodies? There's a very well-known story about a man who asks a woman, would you sleep with me for a dollar? And she says, no. Are you crazy? Would you sleep with me for $1 million? And there's a long pause. He says to her, well, we've established what you are, madam. Now the only question is the price. So this Faustian bargain is something with which we are confronted in every life. All of us are confronted with, what is our bottom line? What is our personal boundary as far as what we are willing to do to get what we want? Well, in Hollywood, I saw very few boundaries and bottoms. Now, there were women, there are stories of women who did say no to Harvey Weinstein, but many, many others have not. And we don't know how many got their start and are famous today because of it. Because the fact of the matter is, the casting couch actually works. Here's some more examples. Years later, in 1975, Newsweek did a story about Daryl Zanuck, and the story was titled The Casting Couch, in which it quoted the words on a plaque above the couch in the office of a Tinseltown producer. It's not Zanuck, it was someone else. in the 50s. "Don't forget, darling, tomorrow you're going to be a star," it said. And it says that in the past 2 weeks alone, more than 30 women have come forward. Well, that's just a spit in the ocean. Marilyn Monroe once famously wrote in a memoir about the sexual predators in her industry. "I met them all," she said. "Phoniness and failure were all over them. Some were vicious and crooked, but they were as near to the movies as you could get. So you sat with them, you listened to their lies and schemes, and you saw Hollywood with their eyes, an overcrowded brothel, a merry-go-round with beds for horses." Marilyn Monroe was a very, very smart woman. And she made her choices as well. If you want to know more, you read the books about Marilyn Monroe and you'll find out. When she finally decided to say no, there were a lot of people that retaliated against her, many people believe. Actress Joan Crawford got her start in the 20s by dancing naked in arcade peep shows. It advanced her career by sleeping with every male star at MGM, except Lassie, quipped her fierce rival, Bette Davis. According to Real Rundown, even at the peak of Crawford's career, rumors continued to surface about how her loathed mother forced Crawford to work as a prostitute, make blue movies, and sleep her way to the top. Louis B. Mayer, another predator, terrorized Hollywood's women long before Harvey Weinstein. Louis B. Mayer would direct a 16-year-old Judy Garland. If you're listening with children, you can turn it off now. To sit on his lap, whereupon he'd palm her left breast while telling her, "You sing from the heart," a creepy anecdote Garland recalled in her memoir. So there's no end to the number of women who have had to put up with this. Now, this was one of the best. I loved this. I mean, I didn't love it, but it was quite a story, and it spoke volumes. Actress Joan Collins, warned by Marilyn Monroe about the wolves in Hollywood, also wrote in her memoir that she missed out on the title role in 1963's Cleopatra, which went to Elizabeth Taylor because she wouldn't sleep with Buddy Adler, the head of 20th Century Fox. She wrote, "I had tested for Cleopatra twice and was the front runner. He took me into his office and said, 'You really want this part?' And I said, 'Yes, I really do.' 'Well,' he said, 'then all you have to do is be nice to me.'" It was a wonderful euphemism in the 60s for you know what. And then, of course, in Hollywood, you have Rosemary's Baby director Roman Polanski. And how fascinating. I mean, we as Jews don't believe in the devil in the most traditional Christian way, but this Roman Polanski, who gave Quaaludes before having sex with a 13-year-old girl in 1977 and was forced to leave the country so he wouldn't be prosecuted, was making Rosemary's Baby, I guess. I don't know if it was at the same time. And Rosemary's Baby, the devil's spawn. How appropriate is that? So you see, all of us, certainly not in Hollywood all the time, are confronted with these choices in life. If we desperately, desperately want a part in Hollywood or the Washington Senators to beat those damn Yankees, the question is, what's the price? What's your price? All of us have had to make those kinds of choices. This gives me actually an opportunity to talk a little bit about the pursuit of fame and the fact that the women who were willing to do anything for fame. I've been fascinated for years because I was in showbiz and I lived in New York and LA. And I saw what people are willing to go through for simply a part in a movie or showbiz in general. It has always fascinated me about the pursuit of fame. And what it is that causes people to want that so badly. I grew up as a child of a stage mother on steroids who was a frustrated actress. She went to California and then she came home because in those days you were really a cheap woman if you traveled and lived alone. This was before Mary Tyler Moore in the 70s, well before, when women, if they lived alone and were trying to make it as an actress, they were already thought of as close to prostitutes. So my mother came home and got married, but she decided to live through me and place all her ambitions, her theatrical ambitions, in me, just as her mother, my grandmother, did with her. My mother was supposed to be the next Shirley Temple. How ironic. That kind of living through your children in that way is very, very common. And if it's been done to you, you have a tendency to do it to others. Now, please don't make any jokes about the fact that our dog is a show dog. Actually, we make jokes about it all the time. People called me a show dog or a show pony, and here we are. We have a show dog, but I don't show him. And he's a dog, not a daughter. But that's some of what my book, Fat Lash, Food Police, and the Fear of Thin is all about, is the pursuit of fame and what people will and won't do for the pursuit of fame. So what's really interesting to me, and I'm going to bring it all the way back to politics, is that the left loves to put people on pedestals. If you had watched, and I think some of you did, the Emmy Awards, in which Hollywood celebrities sit around congratulating each other, and they are already incredibly rewarded with wealth, fame, recognition, a whole bunch of yes men and women. They get the armed security guards that they caution the rest of us against. They get the security fences and the boundaries and the borders that they want all of us not to have. And yet they can stand up at the Emmys and bash Trump and lecture all of us who voted for Trump that we are racist, bigots, homophobes. And they are the moral ones. They lecture us about women's rights and about how Trump is a woman hater, even though all he did was talk. They never found any evidence that he took actions. So let's see. In Hollywood, you can take actions that are criminal, as in Harvey Weinstein's case. But if you speak about it and you're Republican, well, then you are then you deserve to be called out on the carpet. What's really going on here is a political agenda that's gone crazy. And unfortunately, it's good in the sense that it is showing people who the Democrats always, always were. That's who they were. They were people who were hypocrites. So, we're not getting any calls tonight. Nobody wants to, this afternoon, nobody wants to wax philosophic or speak personally. And that I respect entirely. There will be many, many more opportunities to speak up. And the lines are still open if you'd like to speak. But we hope to grow this show. And I'm open, by the way, to your feedback, your comments, your thoughts. And we do have about 5 minutes left in the show, but I'm going to do a couple of housekeeping things now while I still have the opportunity. And that is that if you'd like to get a hold of me or connect with me, you can do so at my website, www.karencataline.com. I have to give you a little caution that as of October 24th, because I am putting up so much audio, I had to increase my bandwidth on the website because I intend to keep these podcasts up so you can listen to them 24/7 anytime you want. You can go to www.karencataline.com, and that's spelled K-A-R-E-N. I'm sure you see it there if you're connected to the show right now. K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E.com. And there you will find the latest podcasts, the archive podcasts, and any other AM radio that I might happen to do like I did last week. And if you have comments or thoughts, you can write to me via email at Karen@KarenCataline.com. It's all going to be the same. Facebook, you can get me at /KarenCataline.com. That's just Facebook.com/KarenCataline. Or Twitter. I'm on Twitter @KarenCataline. Know how to spell my name? You'll know how to get a hold of me. And I love feedback and thoughts about what you've heard. These shows are going to be going out on iTunes and lots of other places. I have a few minutes left, and I would just like to talk about one of the bombshell things that has everything whatsoever to do with the bottom that we've been talking about. My question is, when did Hillary sell her soul and make a Faustian bargain? The Uranium One deal is something that is quite complicated. I had to study up on it a little bit, but I do want to touch on it because if you're listening to this on October 24th, I want you to keep watching. Watch and see who reports on the Uranium One deal and who doesn't. Because who's really being implicated as doing a deal with the Russians? It's the very people that have been accusing Trump of doing the same thing. However, in Trump's case, there has been no evidence. We'll keep watching. If they want to put it out there on their actual facts, we'll do so. In the meantime, there's tons of evidence coming out. The Uranium One deal, just so you know, was a deal that gave 20% of our uranium. 20% was never supposed to leave our shores to the Russians. Now, for 9 months or so, even before, the Democrats have been blaming Trump and saying that he was complicit, that he was in cahoots with the Russians, and that's what they used to claim that Trump was an illegitimate president and that the Russians skewed or involved themselves in our elections. How convenient that was. It was convenient to blame the Russians of all countries, of all people, to blame the Russians so that they could say that Hillary Clinton is the one who should have won. Meanwhile, Hillary and Obama and Bill Clinton were all using American resources as their own to line their own pockets. That's how serious this issue is. And it's not going to go away. You hear the papers rustling because I got a 7-page article on this. Now we know why they wanted to obfuscate the truth about Russia. It was to cover up their own criminal behavior in dealing with the Russians. They've been saying the Russians were so evil. So why'd they give 20% of our uranium to them? Well, why? Partly because the cool $500,000 that was paid by Putin to funnel into Bill Clinton, who was paid 5 times more than he should have. He also met, Bill Clinton met with Putin and then suddenly pocketed a cool $500,000. This is the very essence of pay to play. That's what it is. It's pay to play. So, excuse me. I ask you to stay on top of this issue, the Uranium One deal. Sean Hannity is on top of it. Some of the conservative talk show hosts are on top of it. But it is complex, but critically important. Because if Hillary Clinton had ever made it to the White House, do you think any of this would be coming out? Here's the bottom line. This is why they've been so zealous to get rid of Clinton. This is why they've been so zealous to get rid of Donald Trump as president. That's why people have talked about impeaching him before he ever got inaugurated. Because they knew that a man who tells the truth and who has a moral compass is going to indict those who don't. You are known by those who can't stand you. So keep your moral compass in check and ask yourself this week, what's your bottom line? What's the line over which you won't cross? We'll talk some more about both the philosophy, the politics, and the fascinating things that are going on in this country today on Spouting Off on BBS Radio Station 1. Take care. Have a good week.